You are listening to the serialized audiobook podcast for Blood of the Stars, an epic fantasy novel written by Corinne Norton, read by Peter Franson and Corinne Norton. If you can't wait to listen to the whole audiobook, or if you want a signed physical copy, go to corinnenorton.com/shop to get the lowest cost by buying direct. You can also find the audiobook on Audible, Barnes & Noble, and other standard retailers. Please enjoy the next installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. Chapter 27. The morning after Eliana's initial test, Silmar had her sit just outside the campfire, eyes closed, instructing her to focus on each individual in the group. The others packed their belongings, and Eliana wished she could be helping them, instead of trying to understand what Silmar wanted her to do. Light rain splattered against her trousers, a welcome coolness in the muggy heat of the jungle. She felt hatred pouring out of Kendallin, but that had more to do with the glares she'd seen before closing her eyes than any magical intuition. Cyrus and Veldon bantered over the safety of eating raw bamboo, their voices too energetic for the sun's rise. Holm and Iris were closest, and Eliana thought she might detect a heat from them that represented their energy levels. But what if it had more to do with the love she'd constantly felt between them? Jasperus was the farthest away, but she still felt his presence like the flare of fire. Although even that might have just been his loudness that she sensed, more than any energy levels. Silmar had insisted that she see each person as a vessel requiring the extra energy she held, energy she could push into them to strengthen them for that day's climb. But it remained trapped beneath her own skin.
"Throughout the day, I want you to practice reaching out."
Silmar's commanding tone pulled Eliana from her thoughts. She opened her eyes to find him frowning down at her, leaning on his staff.
"You may have to place a hand on their arm to heighten the connection. Focus on altering their energy levels. It's the crudest form of magic, the hub of the wheel. It's the type of alteration we teach children waiting for their awakening."
Her cheeks burned, and she dropped her eyes.
"It's not meant to be an insult."
Silmar's rough voice softened a hair.
"Until we know your spoke, it will be difficult to teach you the finer methods of tuning, sifting, or adjusting. For now, it's more of a large-scale alteration rather than a tweak. Even your efforts to assess the other's energy levels will help use bits of your energy and take the edge off your growing pain. We'll work on it more tonight, whether you're able to do it during today's trek or not."
He awkwardly patted her back before turning to check on everyone's progress. Eliana sighed as Veldon approached and held out fruits and cheese on a bamboo leaf.
"Cheer up," he said. "His face always looks like that. And don't take it personally. I never do."
Throughout the day, Eliana made minimal effort to alter the other traveler's energy. Most of her efforts were attempted on Lukai, who entertained her with tales of cresting Mount Viscano and made her mouth water when describing his mother's banana leaf pouch holding shrimp and rice. She enjoyed talking to Lukai, but Silmar's assignment put a damper on things. Even if Eliana had managed to succeed in transferring her energy, which she hadn't, the effort of imposing it on other people felt invasive.
Her mind played tricks on her, and at times she swore blood seeped from cuts on her palm before they healed themselves. It was a vision she'd received hundreds of times over the years, especially when her blood grew bloated with magic. But it was no less disturbing. By the sun's sleep, her feet dragged, less with the effort required by the walk, and more with the weight of her blood having been replenished. Later that night, Eliana curled up on her bedroll, the familiar ache spreading through her body. It was like fire being pumped from her heart to every appendage, warning her that eventually the heat's pressure would be too much.
"Are you all right?"
Cyrus asked from his place beside her. "I've been through worse," she said.
"I'll say a prayer to the stars for you,"
he offered. She gave a weak smile of thanks, but wasn't sure if he saw it. They still saw the stars dancing above, weaving in and out among the plain stars in the sky. Their darting light should have been reassuring. Surely prayers could still be heard on this side of the barrier, even if the people here worshipped the sun. Most of the others were occupied setting up camp and making dinner. The last few days had brought them closer to the sound dividing their peninsula from the mainland, which would supposedly bring them to a ferry that would take them down the coast all the way to Valorian. The idea of sitting on a boat instead of walking sounded glorious. Silmar and Jasperus bent over a map nearby, the smaller man's loud voice making Eliana wince as they debated the safety of one road over another. When Silmar was finally satisfied, he came to Eliana, his intention to train written all over the scars on his face.
"I think she's ill."
Cyrus bent forward, placing a hand on her forehead.
"She's in withdrawal," Veldin said as he joined them, his eyes reflecting Cyrus's concern.
"How do we help her?"
Cyrus asked.
"She needs to help herself," Silmar said. "She needs to do magic."
Eliana shut her eyes at the exhausting thought. She'd fought through this before when she'd run from Arvid and Vera. It had been almost 2 weeks that time. But she also hadn't been pushing her body to walk several miles a day with a heavy pack while short on rest. She opened her eyes at a rustling sound near her head. Veldin pulled more seaweed from his pack. It expanded in his hand as his water rehydrated it. He flung it in a bowl, mixing it with other herbs so ferociously that Eliana winced, but his glare was aimed at Silmar. Eliana couldn't stop watching, his motions rhythmic and relaxing as he formed a paste, even while her insides felt stretched to bursting. Without warning, he smeared the paste on Eliana's forehead, then her hands. The concoction was surprisingly cool, like mint with recently thawed spring water, spreading through her body to provide a haze of relief around the areas that ached with her building energy. As the pain relieved a fraction, her mind cleared enough for her to acknowledge that Silmar was right. As agonizing as this process was, she couldn't give up. The only way to subdue her magic was to wean herself from it. And the only way to wean herself was to learn how to do it. She couldn't even think about saving her mother or finding the arrow for Cyrus until she'd accomplished those first steps.
"I'll try again."
She sat up, closing her eyes at the dull throb invading her head. Silmar would have to be content with teaching her here on her bedroll.
At least she could keep her eyes closed. Remind me how to transfer the energy. She had to think of it like getting rid of her magic, just on a smaller scale. She wasn't getting rid of it all at once like she wanted, but she was getting rid of it bits and pieces at a time, passing it around to different people, like sharing a bottle of mead around a room of friends. Not that she had a lot of experience with friends.
Let's try something different instead.
Silmar grunted as he lowered himself to the bedroll next to hers.
Kendalyn, come here.
His shout brought Aeliana's eyes open wide. Kendalyn came without question, but she eyed Aeliana warily. Maybe it was the strange paste coating her hands and face, but Aeliana suspected it was something else. Why did he have to choose her? The woman was probably only a few years older than Aeliana, but she was as intimidating as Silmar. Beneath her tiny frame, Kendalyn had a lot of bite that Aeliana didn't want directed her way.
Sit across from Aeliana. She's going to place her hands on your arms and replenish your energy.
Seeing Kendalyn's apprehension, he added,
Velden will take over your duties by the fire for as long as it takes.
You just don't want to eat her cooking, Velden muttered before ambling over to the cookfire.
I heard that.
Kendalyn's eyes shot daggers at Velden, which Aeliana preferred over them being aimed at her. Aeliana tentatively held out her shaking hands, as if asking Kendalyn for permission to touch her. Kendalyn grumbled something unintelligible before holding out her arms. While Aeliana closed her eyes, she gripped Kendalyn's forearms as if they were locked in greeting. Kendalyn's hands returned the tight hold, and Aeliana tried to sense the other woman's power, to envision it growing as it took on Aeliana's energy. The only thing she sensed was the croak of frogs nearby and the chirp of birds overhead.
I can't, Aeliana started.
You have to give it more than a moment,
Silmar said.
You can do this, Aeliana.
Cyrus's encouraging words flooded through her, empowering her in ways Silmar's sharp rebukes never did. But still, her starlock lay cold against her chest. She tried to concentrate on it, willing it to send the energy in her blood toward Kendalyn. But it was like her power had gotten too strong, clogging all the avenues of release. They sat in silence for so long that the clanking of pots and pans and the crackle of the fire started to hold a rhythm that made Aeliana's focus drift. Kendalyn dug her nails into Aeliana's forearms, the pain pulling her fully awake.
Are you using magic on me?
Aeliana gasped, eyes flying open.
It doesn't require magic to sense you're falling asleep. You nearly fell into me.
Kendalyn's eyes narrowed, and she leaned forward.
Silmar would have more luck training a rock to do magic.
The tremor in Aeliana's hands spread to her arms. Don't use magic on me. Silmar hummed from beside Aeliana, reminding her of their audience.
Kendalyn, sift through Aeliana's soul.
What?
Aeliana tried dropping Kendalyn's arms, but the other woman's grip tightened, her lips curling into a smile as she closed her eyes. Cyrus frowned, tugging on Silmar's sleeve.
Isn't there another? There's a darkness,
Kendalyn murmured.
She carries it with her, holding on to it like a child's favorite toy.
Aeliana tried again to pull away, but Kendalyn held tight. And as Kendalyn sifted through Aeliana's soul,
It was like it was being laid bare before Aeliana, in her mind as well. The darkness Kendallin spoke of spread through Aeliana's soul, painting it as black as the congealed blood her guardians had collected and used at their whim. Tiny winged creatures fed on the edges of her painful past. The image, a shockingly perfect portrayal of the depths of pain Aeliana shoved down on a daily basis.
"Block her magic," Silmar said, nodding at Aeliana, distracting her and dispelling the awful images still floating in her mind's eye. "Do you sense the invasion of her energy? If you don't want to use magic, perhaps subconsciously, you'll at least be willing to use your magic to stop someone else's."
The idea rang with truth in Aeliana's mind, but it didn't help her know how to make it happen. "Her past is full of lies, mostly fed to her, believed by her. Her self-loathing is almost sad." Kendallin's eyes remained closed. "There's a sense that her existence is a mistake. Something the stars must regret." Her voice hitched, and she frowned with uncertainty as she spilled the secrets of Aeliana's soul. Maybe even she realized it was too much to reveal. Aeliana closed her eyes, mortified as Silmar and Cyrus listened in. She forced herself to become aware of the tiny bits of energy surging through her body, how they pumped with her blood and gathered in her heart, how her starlock rested over the well of energy. Kendallin spoke again, but Aeliana didn't hear her words. She fixated on the starlock as a conduit, as the release of the dam holding in her blood's power. Heat stirred in her chest, and the starlock burned. But Aeliana kept her eyes shut, concentrating with an intensity brought on by the fear of losing focus before she could gain relief. As the heat spread, she focused on Kendallin's arms, every place her fingers and hands touched Aeliana's skin. The touch points became targets for the energy. Hope rose in Aeliana with the realization that she could channel her energy, that she could control it. But it was quickly doused by the truth that she wasn't controlling it. She was simply letting it go. Too late, she realized the energy she released was too much for the task at hand, too much to simply block magic. Her eyes flew open, and she tried jerking her arms back, but Kendallin gripped tighter, her sneer deepening for a breath. Aeliana's energy left her body with a palpable rush, searing Kendallin's skin. The other woman's lips split open in a terrified scream as the force pulled the smaller woman across the clearing, where she barely missed the cook fire before slamming into a nest of broken bamboo shoots. Kendallin slumped to the side, and her body went still. Shouts erupted throughout the camp, and weapons were drawn, everyone's gazes darting around for the unknown enemy in their midst. Cyrus gasped, leaning back from Aeliana as if more bursts of energy might escape her. She gaped at her uninjured hands, horrified at what they'd done. Lukai and Veldin rushed to Kendallin, leaning over to examine her. Aeliana's mouth went dry, then flooded with saliva. She turned to retch, stretching across the bedrolls to hit moss instead of blankets. But the moss she'd expected was covered in a thick bed of daisies, which were now covered in her bile. Her hearing dulled and her vision faded, making the chaos that ensued a blur of panicked bodies and muffled shouts.
she'd killed Kendallin. She'd known it could happen, and she'd done it anyway. Aeliana? Hands shook her arms, turning her. A cloth wiped her face, and her gaze finally took in Iris, her lips moving, the words like a foreign language.
What have I done?
Aeliana asked.
It's all right, love. You're fine. Everything will be all right.
She punctuated each word, as if that might be the one to finally get through Aeliana's head. Aeliana looked beyond Iris, where Lukai lifted Kendallin and brought her to the bedrolls. Aeliana scrambled back, watching from a distance as Velden wrapped seaweed around the burns at Kendallin's wrists. Her heart rate slowed. Velden wouldn't heal wounds on a dead woman.
She's alive?
She whispered.
Of course.
Silmar's gravelly voice met her ears.
Thank the stars.
Aeliana's weariness returned. The flurry of activity around her calmed as quickly as it had begun. People returning to their tasks while glancing back at Kendallin, worry in their eyes. Kendallin woke with a brief moan, then quieted down as Lukai placed his hands over her arms. Still, her face remained pale, a grimace straining her features. Jasperus and Holm glanced Aeliana's way, fear replacing their worry. But Iris continued fawning over her, tying back her hair and putting fresh, cool cloths against her burning skin, as if she were the one who'd been injured.
I could have killed her.
But you didn't,
Silmar said. Aeliana turned to face him. For the first time, he looked tired instead of irritated.
What if I had? She asked.
Then it would have been my fault.
His words came out quick on the heels of her question, harsh enough to make her flinch.
It would have been my fault. Because I worked you too hard. Too fast.
They sat in silence for a long moment, their shared guilt unexpectedly tying them together.
Kendallin's parents were killed by Mavis several years ago,
Silmar said.
Publicly, the zealots said her parents desecrated a sun gazer. Something that would have gone to trial in the West with the royal family as judge was settled by the High Priestess in the eastern part of the country. Lukai's family took her in, but her anger runs deep, spilling out into her words and deeds. She's here for a reason that's much bigger than you. Every person here was handpicked, not just for their skill, but for their loyalty. They're all ready to sacrifice anything and everything for this mission to succeed, even if there are bumps along the way.
She glanced back at Kendallin, who slept soundly, knocked out by whatever concoction Velden had given her. Lukai still bent over her, eyes squinted shut while he healed her wounds.
We'll figure this out, Aeliana,
Silmar said.
We're here to push you to learn, but we're also here to help you.
I'm trying, she said, but I'm scared.
I'm not asking you to not be scared. I'm asking you to fight through your fears.
She nodded and let out a shaky breath.
Are your energy stores depleted?
He asked. The heat still swirled in her, but instead of threatening to burst, it merely boiled under the surface. Not absent, but less. He studied her, his face impassive,
Good. Tomorrow we start again, using inanimate objects until you're weaned.
He sighed, leaning heavily on his staff.
It will take too long, but it's our only choice.
Chapter 28. Garen had never felt as relieved to see land as he did when his barrelman spotted Bamboo Island from the crow's nest. Between Lenda's flirting, Aura's eerie way of watching him, and Larkos's loud political opinions, he was ready for an escape. When they anchored Starspeed, Garen asked for volunteers to row him and Aura ashore. Thalahand and Breve were quick to step up. When the other men kept their eyes on the deck, Riverin was the final man to raise a hand.
I'll go.
His gaze rested somewhere between Garen's neck and chest.
Gullet could use some time on land.
Outside of orders, they hadn't spoken since the other night on the crow's nest. Garen had preferred it that way, but Enla had wanted him to stay close to Riverin. For the thousandth time, he wished his sister's visions were more specific. Garen nodded his assent, and soon the five of them were rowing from Starspeed to the small island overgrown with bamboo. It wasn't large, and it was usually deserted. Sailors often made it a stop for repairs, but for now, the coast was empty. Beyond the initial beaches, the earth quickly turned black, the rich soil filled with exotic plants Garen could only vaguely identify as harmless versus suspicious. The sky had grown darker as the day progressed, confirming Larkos's prediction that a storm was brewing. The sailor always seemed to sense them long before Garen. Gullet made himself at home, flying among the trees and diving down for various creatures he deemed worthy for a meal. He didn't return for a time, and it felt safe to assume his hunting had been a success. When they reached the ridge, Aura gasped, holding her hand to her head.
Durrican.
Garen's sword was out in an instant, and he was grateful to see Thalahan, Breve, and Riverin held their own daggers and swords, even though their weapons combined could do very little to Durrican's hide. The last dragon had been spotted a dozen times in the last 10 years, and it was rumored he was Mavis's pet, but that only gave Garen more reason to run a sword through the beast's underbelly.
No, no.
Aura waved them off as if they'd overreacted.
Days ago, he was here.
She crested the ridge, and they all followed, their gazes taking in the blackened earth, not from rich soil, but from burnt foliage. The smoky scent drifted their way, as if the fire had just finished burning out. Garen tried tuning in to his surroundings, but didn't expect much if the memories were days old. Even hours-old memories were often unidentifiable wisps without being attached to a person.
Days ago?
Garen asked.
Like when the light was seen?
Aura nodded.
It's no longer here.
Her voice grew small, and her eyelids blinked rapidly as if holding off tears.
Isn't that a good thing? Garen asked.
Aura ignored him, bending down to thrust her hands in the soil.
I don't think she means the dragon,
Riverin said, putting away his daggers. The scabs on his forehead were nearly gone, but the X still stood out against his pale skin, drawing Garen's gaze. A healer could remove it, but if Riverin was caught hiding his status, not even Garen could protect him from the penalty of death. Aura's eyes were closed again, face tilted to the clouds. Despite the lack of sun, the deep brown of her skin almost glowed. Garen exchanged a baffled look with Riverin while sheathing his sword. Aura twitched, her face scrunching as if in pain.
Is this how she tracks?
Breve's voice cracked as he leaned toward Garen. Garen tensed. He had no idea, but he wasn't about to let Breve know that. Despite Aura's willingness to entertain the sailors with dozens more tales from the far eastern seas, she'd hardly exchanged 5 words with Garen since she'd hinted at the sword's location. He still couldn't grasp why she'd written the Falls if it was last known to be in the possession of Captain Moss. It seemed more likely to be among a Sungazer's artifacts, unless it had been passed down in her family, and she already had it. Or was it the same Starbridge Daisy had used? He'd listened closer to her cleverly crafted stories in case they held more hints, but they'd left him with more questions than answers. She never answered questions about the stories, and after the legend of Lady Redwood, she'd never taken requests. Any inquisitions about herself were unmistakably ignored, including her stake in this voyage. When she'd finally answered his question about what she'd do when they arrived, she'd hummed and said, "Whatever the island tells us to do." Now, Aura pulled her hands out from the ground, flecks of mud speckling her arms elbow to wrist, her light brown hands stained black, fingernails caked with dirt. "Southeast, across the channel and sound, toward Valorian." She brushed her hands together and strode across the ridge, headed for the scorched earth in the valley below. "Wait!" Garen called. "We can't just leave the ship." She turned around.
"Normally we could reach Valorian faster by taking star speed down the coast, but with the storm coming, it might be faster to travel on land. But as captain, of course, the decision is yours."
His mouth dropped open. Was she mocking him? "That's not what I... What if we've overlooked something? We should search here first." Her eyebrows rose.
"What do you think I just did?"
Sun's fire, she was driving him mad. "I have no idea."
"I told you I can sense things better on land. It would be best if you trusted me. The longer we stand here debating my methods, the farther the others get, and the more we're delayed by the storm."
Thalahan snickered, elbowing Breve as they all waited for Garen's decision. He glanced at the sky where even darker clouds rolled in. They'd had smooth sailing using the trade winds so far, but Bamboo Island was in the heart of the dead winds. If anything, a bit of a breeze would be welcome as they fought their way both to the southern trade route and then against its northwesterly winds. Besides, he'd rather face a storm at sea than on land any day. "Let's sail." Garen purposely placed himself between Aura and the others, slowing down until the distance allowed a private conversation.
"What magic do you use?"
It was a question that required tact, but he had no time to ease into the topic. She sighed.
"It's not blood magic, if that's your concern."
It would be a lie to say it wasn't, but without seeing any blood spilled, it was hard to consider it for long. Was she somehow tracing the memory of the Starbridge? Or Daisy's memory? "How do you know where to go?"
"When you tune in to someone's memories, how do you find them?"
He spun around, forcing her to stop. She stared up at him, her face too serene, almost uninterested.
"How do you know my spoke?" "You tried reading mine when we first met. I sensed it then. Along with your affinity for sensing truth. It's dampened, but still useful."
He'd never heard someone use the term reading, like memories were a book to be explored. It gave him the uneasy feeling that she belonged on an entirely new spoke. Maybe an entirely different wheel of magic.
"Besides, you've continued trying to access my memories despite my advice to never use magic on me. It's not like you've been hiding your spoke."
He felt the warning in her words, even as she glanced beyond him.
"We should catch up with the others."
"If you want me to help you, you need to start explaining things." She frowned, swiping at the sweat dripping down her temples, leaving streaks of mud across her face.
"When devouring the moon, small bites are digested more easily."
"That's not an answer." She huffed, pushing past him on the path back to the beach.
"It would be if you were listening. And until you truly listen, it's all you will get."
He ran after her like a child chasing his mother. But he didn't care how desperate he looked.
How do you expect me to follow your directions if you're not willing to give me context? She glanced over her shoulder, her expression mildly amused.
The same way you expect your men to blindly follow you.
He caught up to her, but her words were too much an echo of Larkos's for Garen to feel like they were still having the same conversation. It takes time to build that trust.
Time,
she snorted, the closest thing he'd heard to a laugh from her.
More like money, which is still symbolic of our working relationship. Only I'm delivering you the location of the person or thing you're chasing. Whichever it is you want, it will be at the end of this journey.
They'd nearly reached the rowboat where the others, even Gullet, had already settled in, but Garen still didn't have answers.
And if it's not?
She turned and raised an eyebrow at him.
It will be.
Without warning, she plucked a handful of red leaves from a nearby plant, then grabbed Garen's wrist, placing the leaves in his open palm. He automatically shut his hand around them before they could fall.
Red bush leaves. They make a fantastic tea.
She smiled, then turned her back and joined the men by the rowboat. Garen's words to Enla came back to him, plans to bring back red bush tea for their mother. Did Aura expect this offering to somehow put her more in his favor? Or was it some sort of warning that she knew far more than any one person should? Still, he grabbed more of the leaves, stuffing his pockets to the brim. No one spoke as they rowed through the choppy waves back towards Starspeed, probably because Garen couldn't keep a scowl off his face. Traveling to Valorian would be worth it if they found Eliana, but if not, Aura would probably spit in the wind and say they had to take the Darkwater currents down to Andel. Enla would be furious if he didn't make it back before the dignitaries arrived. His bad mood stayed with him even as he gave the command to turn and set sail for Valorian. Several of the men whooped and hollered, as the town was known for its bawdy taverns.
"What did you find on the island?"
Larkos asked, leaning against the bulkhead while Garen steered.
"Nothing."
He spat the word out, his glare still resting on Aura, who perched on the bow as if willing the boat forward. He rested a hand on his dagger, rubbing the daisy on its pommel.
"There must have been something if we're moving on to Valorian, especially with high winds. It's going to be a nasty one."
Garen pressed his lips together, irritated that Aura's unwillingness to speak was only serving to make him look like more of a fool. The door to the captain's quarters opened, saving him from having to answer. Lenda's pale face peeked out, her brow furrowed in confusion as they sailed south from Bamboo Island. Larkos's cackle raked on Garen's nerves.
"I'll take the wheel so you can deliver the bad news to your bondmate."
I hope you enjoyed listening to the latest installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. If you enjoy listening to this narration, you might also enjoy listening to his audio dramas at spiritblade.com or his podcast, Christian Geek Central, where he discusses movies, video games, and all things enjoyed by self-proclaimed geeks from a Christian worldview. Thanks so much for listening.